Hey guys, it's Chris Denson here from Innovation Crush. This episode is brought to you by SendPro from Pitney Bowes. SendPro has three times the features of Stamps.com at one-third the price. You can print stamps from your computer, saving both time and money. You don't have to wait in line at the post office. And you can even print paid shipping labels for USPS and UPS and more. Track your shipments from the same easy-to-use interface. And guess what? Pitney Bowes has negotiated special rates for SendPro users, and the savings start at only 3 cents per stamp. I suggest you go to pb.com/crush to learn more. And when you sign up, you'll get SendPro free for 90 days. You'll get a free 10-pound scale. And when your trial is over, you'll get SendPro for only $5 a month for life. That's way less than stamps.com. And it's three times the features at one-third the price. But you can only get this deal for a limited time. So go to pb.com/crush. That's me. And tell them your buddy Chris Denson sent you. Hey everybody, welcome to another installment of Innovation Crush, recorded live at the SAE Institute. Did you know that? Did you know that's where you were?
Did not.
Well, this is an amazing place, an amazing education on audio engineering, anything you want to... Miguel, what are you studying?
Audio engineering.
So,
imagine that.
Like, exactly. It is the SAE Institute. In case you guys are tuning in for the first time ever, this show covers all things marketing ideas, creativity, innovation, etc., etc. And that's a nice shirt, by the way. I'm gonna keep complimenting you as much as possible, but I do like that shirt. JT McCormick, say hello.
Hello. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate the compliment.
Well, yeah, you got the silken paisley roll up on the sleeves. That's a nice touch.
Appreciate that.
So for starters, let's just start with a little bit of 101. Who is JT McCormick? We can do the abbreviated version. We got a lot of time to talk. So the abbreviated version of who JT McCormick is.
The abbreviated version. So I tell you what, since you want to abbreviate it, why don't you hit me with a question? I'll abbreviate it for you.
How does JT McCormick describe himself to someone who's never met him?
Result-driven work ethic is how I would describe myself. I am very driven and results driven, and phenomenal work ethic is how I would describe myself.
It's funny you say that because, you know, in our research team of one, I actually found a lot of like accolades and just personal testimonies of your work ethic. You know, they talk about your personality plus being results oriented and getting teams there. So let's go job title wise for a second. Then I'm gonna get into like what these people have said about you, and you can seek revenge on them if you need to. The CEO, Book in the Box. Tell me about that, and then we'll dive in a little bit deeper.
President and CEO of Book in a Box, I have had a phenomenal opportunity to take over the company from Tucker Max, and Tucker Max being one of three people in the history of the world who have had three New York Times bestsellers on the list simultaneously, nonfiction. So it was very interesting to step in and take over for him. So, but with the company itself, Book in a Box, we have created a process that allows individuals to write their book. So we turn ideas into books without the person actually having to sit down and do the writing.
That's pretty amazing. Numbers wise, I think there's been over 300 books. There's been...
We're actually over 400 now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right. See, I told you, research team of one, man.
Solid year last year.
That's pretty good. Is there like a selection criteria? Like what's that process like? Somebody meets you on the street and you tell them what you do and they're like, I have an idea for a book.
Well, so, you know, everyone has an idea for a book,
right?
But for us, we don't take everyone on, and I like to make the joke that many people, if you start out and say, oh, I want to be a New York Times bestseller and I want to sell a million copies, probably not for us. We're looking for the right individuals who are driven by an ROI. What's the reason for writing the book? Is it lead generation? Do you want credibility? Do you want to be the thought leader in your space? Things of that nature. But if you're looking purely for fame, wrong phone number.
Yeah, and that's interesting. I would imagine a higher percentage of the inquiries are on that end of the, hey, I have an idea and I want to do a New York Times bestseller. But, you know,
what is it about the brand that you guys have created that resonates so well, right? 400 books, you know, millions in like sales on those books. I don't know. What's the lifeblood? Like, what's the thread when you're going and selecting the people that you're going to work with?
You know, it's not a selection. It's more the people who come to us have a given ROI for it. So, right. so I'll use a very easy one. So let's say you have a financial planner. There is a big difference between handing someone your book and handing someone your business card. So if I hand you a book and I tell you I've written a book on retirement planning, well, instantly I have credibility behind that book. The beauty of what we do is we provide a phenomenal book. So this isn't something that you run down to Kinko's, staple together, and then there's my book. There's actually high quality, and the team members that we have.
By the way, the reason I was late is because I was at Kinko's stapling my book together. So here actually. So.
We'll work on that.
No, and that's great. The thing that's interesting about this is that this business is not your history. And you have this like history of jumping into industries kind of feet first and kind of coming in with a right to be naive, I guess. But kind of talk a little bit about your history previously. I mean, coming from a software company,
yeah,
and turning that from a small organization to a massively successful one. But just like, let's talk about a little bit on that.
So came from software background, and I had the absolute privilege to be a part of a company. We started with 10 individuals. We actually used to make our sales calls off of fold-out metal chairs in a storage closet. And we scaled the company from 10 people to well over 100 and ended up with 4 offices throughout Texas and 1 in Monterey, Mexico. And to your point, I cannot tell you connect the dots from .NET when it comes to software. So I always had a different perspective about the business and what we actually did. And so when I did get to Book in a Box, I quickly learned the term beginner's mindset. And that's really the area of which I operate from. I'm that third grader that walks into the room and will ask a ton of questions.
How do you sell that, though, right? Like, nobody wants to hire a beginner, at least on paper, right? The perception is, like, I want to hire a CEO who knows what he's doing and, like, knows our business. But here comes a third grader, and you're like, come on in, sit down, here's your office. Like, what's the value proposition in that?
Well, the value proposition actually is, I don't need to be a writer. I don't need to write software to scale a business. And what I look at is you have individuals who are phenomenal at creating companies or taking an ideal from 0 to 1. I'm not your 0 to 1 guy. I'm your 1 to a billion guy. That's the end that I fall. So I've just realized and recognized where my lane is, and I stay in that lane.
Right.
So walking into Book in a Box, no, I'm not a writer. Truth be told, I can't tell you an adverb from a pronoun. But I understand the author mindset, especially because I actually came to Book in a Box as an author first before CEO.
Right. And talk about that process, too, because that's an interesting journey. Like, you walk in, like, hey, guys, I want to work with you. And then you're like, no, I really want to work with you. Like,
So what was incredible is Tucker actually came over to the office when I was at the software company, and we sat down, and I expressed to him, I said, look, I don't care if I ever sell one copy. And he said, you know, in all the years that I've been in publishing and writing books, I've never heard anyone say that. And the goal for me was to do a book for my children, and so they would have a legacy piece and know where their father came from. So as Tucker and I are wrapping up, he said, yeah, you've got a book here. This is great. You know, let's get together. Great. What are next steps? He said, hey, I'm kind of new to the CEO thing. Do me a favor. Can you give me some feedback on the company as you go through the process? And I said, yeah, sure. Why not? So my first interaction, I got an email, and I called up Tucker, and I said, hey, how serious are you about wanting feedback? And he said, very. So I started laying into him about the email I received.
Did the Fred Flintstone cousin? Fricker, shucker.
So one thing led to another, and to give you the short version of the story, I got to sit in one of their executive meetings, and then I was invited to be one of their advisors. Next thing we know, we're negotiating out terms on me being the CEO.
Well, also, kudos to Tucker, because, you know, and maybe I don't know what you recognize in this. I think probably even in your decision process of going there is somebody who is open to feedback and willing to make a drastic change like that. Hey, I'm going to step down from my role, hire this guy that doesn't, you know, has never authored or thought, you know, read a book, the third grader, if you will. but also recognize his faults, his shortcomings, and that still sounds negative, but you know what I mean, as a founder and entrepreneur and realizing like, hey, I need the 1 to 100 guy. Have you seen that in other entrepreneurs, or like, what is it about Tucker that, you know, kind of was the glue for you and like that self-awareness?
I would say for Tucker, it was the self-awareness, and I would also not go out on a limb, but I'll say the maturity aspect came into it as well. If you're, and this isn't a knock on the 20-year-olds, but if you're a 20-something founder, it's hard to let go of your baby.
Right.
But if you want your baby to grow and you want to scale that baby, sometimes you got to step to the side and bring in someone who actually understands how to do that.
And yeah, because it's hard. It's hard for anything you create, right? Most creators or creatives, artists, if you will, musicians, like you hold on to a vision for probably too long, or you run the risk of holding on to it for too long. How have you remained flexible and nimble? Because I think as those companies grow and scale, there's a lot of like change management. I read one blog post which is really great about the firing process, right? Like, you know, bad things need to happen too, or perceivingly bad things, right? So what's your process in like going through examining, making changes, especially like providing comfort to people in times of change? What is that like?
The number one piece out of all of that, Chris, is always be able to surround yourself with people who are better than you. I like to jokingly say that if the day ever comes that I'm the smartest person in the room, we've all got problems. So the goal is to surround yourself with the best and the brightest. And my role as the CEO will always be people first. How do we find that talent? How do we keep that talent? How do we scale? And you can only do that by way of people. So we pride ourselves on having a phenomenal culture, a phenomenal tribe, and with that makes it a lot easier to scale.
You know why I believe you?
Why is that?
Not just because you're here, but in 2009, the company was named number 127 on Inc. 500, the exclusive ranking of the nation's fastest growing private companies. In 2015 alone, we have been honored with 4 state and national Best Places to Work awards. And that was with Headspring under your leadership.
Correct.
Right? So, again, like, what is the JT McCormick definition of culture?
People first. Take care of your people. Make sure that in the role of a CEO, it's, in my opinion, solely to serve. If I need to take out the trash, I'll take out the trash. But my goal is to serve those around me and ensure that they're best positioned to excel in their careers. That's it.
And even going back to this whole firing issue. Because, I mean, it just is one of those things that need to happen. But from what I read, and this was Tucker talking about you, I believe, but it was such a compassionate approach to that process and like really still taking care of the individual in that moment, which is nobody wants, like you don't want to go through that, you know, on either end of of it. But what is that like, what's that compassion component that you even in those times kind of are able to exhibit?
Really thinking through what it's like when in so many people, especially in the corporate world, have turned the firing process into a cold, just almost non-human process. And at the end of the day, you have to say to yourself, these individuals are going to leave. They have to go home to their families. They're going to sit and have to think through what just happened. So as a human being, my goal is to sit with those individuals and train up or train out so people understand, okay, I'm not a fit for this role. Either we can shift you somewhere else within the company or we have to exit you out of the company. But it can be done gracefully. It doesn't have to be a cold process where it's just uncomfortable for everybody involved.
well, rarely do you hear somebody say, I got fired, and it was such a nice experience. Like, you know, like that's a rarity. Like, you, in most cases, it's like, I told him, I gave him my 2 weeks notice, and then security was at my office, like, a little while later. So kudos to you for at least having that, you know, the compassionate piece. Where was that instilled in you, like, as a human being? Because not everybody has that as a personality trait, even if they've had the best MBA, you know, management training. There's still assholes out there, but you're not one.
Putting people first. I would say much of it was self-taught throughout growing up, understanding what it was like to, from the personal perspective, since you asked the question, growing up mixed race and being half white, half black, and at times understanding that There were times in life where black people didn't like me because I was half white, and white people didn't like me because I was half black. So there was an identity piece at times. What that led to in growing up is understanding others and having respect of all people, regardless of where they fit in our society. So it was really just people first and understanding what it was like to be looked down upon,
right,
in many ways.
Well, I mean, this is also a great segue into the novel. I Got There, How I Overcame Racism, Poverty, and Abuse to Achieve the American Dream. And you just only talked about one piece of that just now, right? Like, so it gets worse. It gets worse. It's all downhill from there, folks. Talk about this book. I mean, you know, and this was really interesting when we first got introduced. It was, same thing you said to Tucker. I want something for my kids to tell them this story. And, you know, even as I thumb through it, it's like there are some heart-wrenching moments that you've grown up with, which obviously have echoed or stayed with you in a positive way, you know, as you've gotten older. But tell us about the book and why it's here.
Well, like I said, the book started off, this was going to be nothing more than a legacy piece for my kids. And as we got into it, and I worked with our tribe and all those involved, from Mark, Amanda, Tucker, everybody that have their fingerprints on the book, it really became obvious, as they put to me, that it would be selfish of me not to have this book go out to the world, because it could help so many.
So you mean in the literal sense, you really wanted to just do it for your kids?
I literally...
You did not plan on putting this in stores selling it?
As you said, there are some heart-wrenching stories in there. Yeah. In fact, there are some stories in there that I swore were going to go to the bottom of the ocean and no one would ever know. And so that book was truly written for my children. And it turned into, okay, there's so many people who, quote unquote, come from the economic piece of life where I come from, i.e. the hood, that I wanted people to understand. The options that are sometimes given to us, I'm not a rapper, I'm not an athlete, I'm not a drug dealer. Well, there's this fourth option that no one told us about in the hood, and I want to share that with those who are in the hood and show them that, hey, you can get out, and here's what I did to get out.
Speaking of the fourth option, tell us about Uncle Bobby.
are you referencing specifically the story of where we left everyone on family church vacation, or
no, but that's a good story. No, just the idea of, like you mentioned those options, right? Like, most people from the hood, it's like basketball, you know, pick up a basketball or wrap your way out of here,
right?
Or sell dope and you might get out. But that, you said the fourth option was business, and you mentioned how Uncle Bobby was the one who introduced you to the concept. And I think in most of us, it takes one moment of enlightenment, you know, if you will, to kind of reach that innovation potential.
Right.
It's like, oh, now I completely see the world differently. So what was that, and, you know, what were the exchanges like, or at least the early ones that had an influence on you to kind of make the JT McCormick we see here?
Yeah, it was a combination. You know, I learned to keep going from my mother, from my dad. I learned to hustle. My dad was a pimp, a 1970s pimp, hustler. And when I say pimp, not in the form of what Jay-Z's turned the word into. He was a real
Huggy Bear.
Exactly. Exactly.
Talking to the cops.
So, but Uncle Bobby actually gave me my first view of life, of going to work, structure, going to church, Bible study, keeping to your word, follow through. And so Uncle Bobby was really the first person I got to see. If you produced, he actually rewarded you. And I had not seen that before until I was 13 years old.
Right. And also, I think around the time you were 13 was a time when your dad says, "Hey, I'm going to Europe for a couple of weeks." And the line is something along the lines of, "That was the longest two week vacation in the history of vacations."
my dad on January 2nd said he was going to England for 2 weeks, and he did not come back until the day before Christmas Eve. So yeah, that was the longest 2 week in the history of mankind. And between that, let's call it a year, by far the worst year of my life, and everything that I went through, from being in and out of juvenile, being left with my half brothers and sisters for 3 weeks, not going to school. That was just a horrible time period.
Okay, so realistically, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, this is the thing that you know, either you succumb to or you massively overcome these circumstances. And you know, as much as we can tell, it's like flip the cards and see where they land. But maybe not, right? Like maybe the importance of your story is, hey, here's how you can overcome any sort of dire circumstances, whether they're as deeply grave as yours or just a little less impactful. But what was it, you know, that stuck with you and made you not succumb to it, and you know, and take those first steps towards just bettering things for yourself?
I always believed that there was just a better way out of here, that it could be done. My mother had a very limiting mindset, and I still keep the mindset to a degree. As she always said, there were people worse off than us, and that was true. But my reply to her was always, well, there's people better off than us as well, and I choose to focus on them. So
it's 50-50.
Exactly.
It's a 50-50 world out there.
I'm going to focus on the people who are better than us and realize that many of these people put on their pants just like I do. So their pants may be
a
little
more expensive.
By the way,
do you like
my pants? I do like them. I was actually checking you out when I walked in.
Weird camouflage? Oh, sorry. I just transitional statement. No, go ahead. Knowing that there's people out there like you and like have the same sort of struggles. And then what was that first step you took? I don't know, where you kind of, because there's one thing to think it and kind of know it. And my mom has the same story. Like, she grew up in the projects of Detroit, and I asked her the question a few years ago. She has two master's degrees now, like studied and taught fashion design and so on and so forth, owns real estate. But you know, I was like, what was it about it? And she was like, I used to sit on the porch and just think, there's got to be something better than this.
Yep.
And that would, and you know, but she also has siblings, right? And you know, I think they all sort of made a name for themselves in some way or another, but you know, to varying degrees.
Yeah.
So what were those first steps where you start to put the thought into practice?
First and foremost, it's a choice. You have the choice to stay sitting on the porch, or you have the choice to go and do something. And the key is, many people, I always like to refer to it, you hear in the hood a lot, Chris, is I'm about to.
Mm-hmm. I'm about to get this money.
I'm about to get this money. I'm about to get these Jordans. I'm mm-hmm. always about to do something, but you're never really doing anything. And so the choice, just like now, I have the choice to sleep in each morning, or I have the choice to get up. So it all comes down to choices, and I chose that I wanted to be successful, and no matter what, I was going to find a path to get there. I mean, it wasn't always easy. I made some money. I ended up broke and made some more money, but it's life is full of choices. You just have to decide what choice you're going to make.
So how do people receive the book publicly? Well, like when you go out and you start telling these stories and they've read them, you know, what's the response been?
Overwhelmingly, very, very positive. What I was prepared for, even from growing up, you always have those individuals that no matter what, they always want to pull you back. They want to say, yeah, but, or you don't understand. And I, man, I've been
still mixed.
Yeah, exactly. You're still, I'm still mixed. I was still sexually molested. I was still in juvenile, and I still only have a high school diploma, and I barely got that.
Right.
You know, in the book, there's the section where, and this is important for me, when I got my high school diploma, one, I never graduated high school. I didn't get to walk the stage, so I had to go to summer school to get my high school diploma. So I went to summer school, finished, got my necessary credits, and they said, okay, here's your slip. Go back to your high school, and they'll give you your diploma. Chris, I don't know what I was expecting for the confetti to come down and fireworks to go off, but I walk into the school. I've got my piece of paper. No one's in the school. There's a janitor and the admin assistant. And the janitor comes up and says, "May I help you?" I said, "I need to pick up my diploma." Hand it to him. He walks over to the lady. Then he goes over to the she shakes her head. He goes over to the safe. He unlocks it, and he pulls out the diploma, and he comes over and hands it to me and says, "There you go. That's it. No congratulations, no confetti, no fireworks, but that's how I got my high school
just
diploma."
An awkward pause.
That was
like
it.
Like, you done?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So, again, to your point, is it's just life's about choices. What do you want to do? What do you want to be? So overwhelmingly, it's been positive. The people who have reached out and emailed me, my email's in the book, and said, "Wow, this is great, very inspirational, makes me want to hustle, makes me want to be a better person." And I cannot tell you how humbling that is, that someone would read my story and say it makes them want to be a better person.
Right. And even along those lines, I'm sure you, like you said earlier, you had the struggle of, do I want to tell these stories? Do I want this to go to the bottom of the ocean? In my mom's briefcase that she gave me from her being an orphan, right? Because it's all the stuff is generationally handed down, yeah, to some extent. What was like the decision process, and how did you feel? Like, did you have like knots in your stomach? Like, I'm about to tell these stories that I'm uncomfortable publicly telling, but becoming more and more comfortable with.
I've made peace with it now. It was somewhat therapeutic to go through these. And truth be told, my father actually passed away as I was doing the book.
Oh, wow.
And so I had not spoken to my father in 30 years, had not been back to Dayton, Ohio in 30 years. And so it was a mix of emotions in doing this book, because there were stories that came up from my childhood and from the sexual abuse that I swore I'd keep to myself, to the times that I was left with my half brothers and sisters. Yeah, and to put that in a book, it's an emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
The way I can best sum it up is when we were doing the book launch in Austin, the day we were getting ready to head over there, my wife asked me, "Are you excited?" And I said, "No." And she goes, "Why not?" I go, "Imagine taking your darkest moments, your secrets, things that you may or may not be proud of at all, and now they're in a book for the whole world to read. Would you be excited?" And she goes, "No."
Oh, I see. it sounds like it's been a great process having done it, right?
Because
there's this whole duality, I feel like, to high-functioning individuals, you know, high-functioning creatives, et cetera, et cetera. What has stuck with you, maybe good or bad, from, you know, that rough upbringing as you continue to kind of like evolve in your own career, right? Like the habits or the hesitations, like what are those things that like you can readily recognize, like, oh, that's kind of from my experience as a kid?
The work ethic and always, I've just never forgotten where I've come from. And so I live in Austin, Texas, and there is a Salvation Army on 7th Street, and it's just full of homeless. And at least twice a month I drive by there, and I never forget, you know, I was about a half a step from being there. So I always keep in perspective where I've come from, and I'm always appreciative of what I have, everything.
That's great. That's great. Even prior to the software business, you were in mortgage. Like So
Chris, you just choose to bring up some of those uncomfortable moments.
I don't think it's uncomfortable. I think here's the thing. I think a lot of us have like these journeys that don't make sense until some inflection point where you're like, ah, that's what it all means, right? And whether you recognize who your gift as a CEO, and that in and of itself is a gift, you know, that skill. But you've also like you've explored, and I think that's part of the journey, is like exploring and like having the failures and having the fun and the glory and the downside. So I don't know what the question was in there, but I just wanted to expose all your imperfections. No, I guess that's. what's the common denominator with you, right? Yeah, you talked about the people, but like when you walk into a room, you know, what do you feel? What do you want people to like walk away with from an encounter with you? And this can be in a business sense more so, I think I'm looking at, when you do walk into a room and you encounter people, what is that thing?
Business or personal, the number one thing that I want people to walk away from is that I'm a genuine person and I'm a caring person. And I never for one moment ever do I ever feel that I'm above anyone else. And I talk about this in the book as well. For me, I am very much known for treating service individuals, if you will, even better than CEOs and, right. and high-level executives. You got enough people that kiss up to those individuals.
Right.
But people will often overlook or not give the same respect to those in the service industry. You know, the people who clean the hotel rooms, the people who take your money at the gas station. Those are the individuals that I would say I hold in the highest regard. So what do I want people to feel is that I'm a genuine person and I treat everyone with respect.
Shout out to a friend of mine, George Brett, who wrote a book, I think it's called First Time Executive. And he talks, the whole theory and his whole career has kind of been based on this, is like a new executive comes into an environment and most of them fail within the first 18 months. And they're out, then you got the next one and so on and so forth. And part of the solve for that is get an early win. What is your strategy going into new environments and gaining the trust? I get you're a nice guy, right? Hey, janitor, you doing all right? All right. You know, but like, what is that like, strategically, what's your approach to like really winning over the business trust that this is our captain.
You know, I was fortunate, especially coming into Book in a Box. My first quarter there, we had a seven-figure quarter, and we had not had one before, so it was the very first one. And so that was a huge win. And really all it took was some structure, and that was a huge win for us as an organization. But as I told Zach and Tucker, the two co-founders, is, okay, great, let's celebrate that seven-figure quarter, but let's not celebrate it again until we do it back to back. And then we became very fortunate that we did it three quarters in a row, and we're still doing it. So those were huge wins. Simultaneously, it was not just winning, because I also had to – I was averaging a person a month exiting out of the company my first 7 months there. So it was
– like I'm bleeding individuals.
Exactly. But, you know, we had to make sure we got the right tribe members and the right people in the right seats so we can scale.
You said tribe a few times.
Oh, yeah.
What define that for
– So not a fan of the word employees – and damn sure not a fan of the word human capital. It sounds like we're trafficking people.
True.
So when I was at Headspring.
Well, now there's a travel ban, so you can't traffic anybody.
There's that little caveat there. But when I was at Headspring, we called them team members. And when at Book in a Box, and they had already had this implemented long before I got there, is we referred to everyone as tribe members. So we're a tribe. And so we're not employees. We're not team members. We're tribe members. And that's what keeps our culture solid.
Branding is sex. How to get your customers laid and sell the hell out of anything.
Deb Gabor.
Because that was, like, as I'm strolling through, I'm like, what? And this is a great sort of testament, I think, to your theory on this book is a business card in some way. There's an ROI attached. Tell me about, you know, that strategy. I kind of have a second question there, which is probably more like, what's the balance between storytelling and business, right? Like I you want to tell a genuine story, and then as you get toward the end, I start to hear a little bit more about your business journey, right?
Yeah.
This isn't like hardcore business principle.
No.
Debs, you know, it's definitely like an in-your-face title. It's black and gold. Like, it just looks like a sex book. Not that I've read a lot of sex books in my life, right, Miguel? He knows. But no, like, what is that balance between storytelling and like business card?
So the beauty of this, when we do the books, it's written in the author's voice. So our goal is to make sure that if you pick up my book, Deb's book, that you feel as if Deb's reading that book to you. So it's full of Deb's experiences, her business acumen, her knowledge that she's putting into the book. It's not us, quote unquote, ghostwriting. So many people confuse us and say, oh, so you guys do ghostwriting. No, not at all. Our books are comprised of the author in their tone, their voice, their experiences, and their knowledge. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. It's interesting because, I mean, I feel like in our conversation, this idea of empathy comes up, right? And then I think in order to translate your experience into your words for you, right, I have to, like, absorb you.
Correct.
And I don't know if that's whoever had to do your book probably was like in tears on a daily basis.
There's a lot of tears shared with my book.
But yeah, you know, how do you hire against it? How do you find like the right writers that, you know, can structure your thoughts in a way that you would construct them, but that is digestible to an audience?
And therein lies the magic of our company, Chris. that is, again, we are fortunate to have a tribe member of people who have the expertise, who have done books on top of books, who have published books, who have had the experiences of working with the Layla Ali's, the Bob Hopes, the Mike Wallace's of the world. So we've been fortunate that we have that experience. And if you notice, I'm not giving you the secret sauce to what we do. But
you've been PR trained. That's fine. I'll ask you again a different way later.
But it's done through a series of interviews, Chris. What we ask you to do as an author is sit back, let us ask the questions, and let us pull that information out of you through a series of interviews. And we don't want you to do any of the writing. We don't want you to sit there and prepare in advance. We want to pull that information out from you from the beginner's mindset.
And I think, I mean, even regardless of if I won a New York Times bestseller or if I won an ROI, I think there's still a threshold by which a time I'm ready. You know, have I had enough life experience? Have I had enough experience in this particular thing? You know, I get emails all the time like, hey, I would love to be a guest on your show. And I'm like, not yet. Right. Like,
yeah,
and what you've done has been amazing, but not yet. Like, what's that breaking point? Or have you identified a few things where it's like, all right, I like your intention. You have a good heart. You know, you're on your way. Like, what? And how do you break that news?
Well, no, that's a very fair question because there are many people that we actually turn away. truth be told, this happened yesterday. I had a person. And it was a call that we were going to go through and find out what her book was about. And her title she shared was Why Hitler Got It Right. Yeah, we're not doing a book with you. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
We are not doing a book with you. So my point there is, yeah, we do turn people away. And not everyone has a book in them. You may have an idea, but to your point, it may not just be enough for a book.
Right.
And we disclose that up front, that we say, look, we don't work with everyone. There's not always a book there.
Right.
So there's no surprise.
And I think that happens, you know, I love the parallel, like that happens in business, that happens in careers, that happens in entrepreneurial journeys. Like I have an idea and I want to develop, and you're like, not yet, right? There's always this not yet thing. What do you encourage people to do in that moment, right? Like, or do you just kind of sever ties altogether? You don't have to mentor them through like the next 6 weeks to massage them, but like, do you give feedback and say?
We do. We give feedback, and the way I like to explain it when I've been asked that question before is, just because you graduated college and you got your degree doesn't automatically entitle you to a VP position, the corner office, a Lexus, and six figures a year. I mean, it takes time and it takes the experiences to actually have something to say to put in a book. And, you know, as you said, people want to be on the show. People want to sit with you. You're not quite there yet. You need a little more. And we don't have a problem expressing that to people.
That's great. It's just that whole idea of honesty and empathy and really understanding and giving good feedback at the right time. The show is called Innovation Crush. You've in the past 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's back up. what did the next 2 years look like? You know, like, is it more volume of books? Are you guys looking to evolve your offering? Like, are you going to do more story? Like, what's the what can you tell us?
That's a great yes, we are looking to evolve, and really everyone who writes a book is writing a book for validation, credibility. They want to be the thought leader, and they're looking for attention of some sort. Most of our authors. And so what we're doing behind the scenes is scaling the company more than just outside of doing books. We actually want to help people achieve those goals of bringing attention to themselves and their books. So, yeah, there's much more to
see. That look in your eyes right now.
Oh, yeah. Like, you see the excitement, don't you?
Exactly. Like, what? This new move is about to slap the bleep out of you.
Yes, it is.
Why do you see this new move? What I was about to say, the show is called Innovation Crush. What do you see out in the world that you are currently crushing on? I mean, 400 plus books, but maybe you've also come from a software world. You've seen the hood. Like, where are you seeing the things that you're like, oh my gosh, that is so amazing. That gives me goosebumps.
The amazement that I'm seeing right now is through where we are as a society and wanting to give back to people. I really have enjoyed watching throughout the elections how much people have come together and rallied to want to make a difference in society and come together. When you see what's going on in Chicago, when you see what's going on in the elections, and now we've got the travel ban, I feel that in our country, this is one of the first times since back in dare I say, Martin Luther King and the civil rights, that you've seen so many people come together as a society. And so if I want to say what am I crushing on, it would be that. And especially for me, where I come from, you referenced this earlier, the overwhelming feedback that I have received on my book, and I didn't understand it at first, was, oh, your book is perfect timing for where we are in our country right now. And it took me a moment to understand where are people going with that. And I understand the race piece of it, the inequality piece of it, the pay discrepancy that we have in our country. And I got to say this, Chris, this part blows me away in our country where we are right now. How in the hell are we still in this day and age where men and women are not paid equally for doing the same job? It blows me away.
Well, it puts more money in my pocket, so. Sorry, lady. No, I'm just kidding. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, there was some post yesterday about a board member of a really popular company
that's about to go public.
Yes, and like there's a picture of her sitting at with her chin in her palm, and it's like she's out of all the board members, she gets paid like she's going to get the least.
Yeah.
Out of that. So it's pretty. I mean, there's a lot of things that we all wish would go away. I think what you started off though, you even by answering the question, is with a positive outlook. I swear to you, like I was in the studio the day of the inauguration, and I'm not, at least via this show, a politically minded individual.
Right.
But I know I tell a broad swath of stories, and I want people to hear the innovation perspective from multiple angles. And I've included a lot of people who run the risk of being, you know, underserved, yeah. Severely underserved by this administration. And I felt pumped up. Like, I was like, cool. Like, I felt like I was about to go play a basketball game against Kobe and somebody's going to kill me afterward if I didn't win. Right? And I was like, all right, well, let's do this. First, I get to play with Kobe and whatever. That's a horrible metaphor. But you know, this idea, like, you chose to look at it from, you looked at the unity where most people, I think, if you look at most people, most of our Facebook feeds, it's like, I can't believe how awful things are right now. So it's a weird, like, dynamic in terms of how you choose, like, you know, your whole idea of choice to view the circumstances.
No, totally. And I've been asked that. JT, how did you do it? What's your secret? How did you become successful? It's a choice. How do you choose to see life and what's provided to you? And I look to how can I make this work for me versus what's working against me?
Right.
And it's just which side do you want to look at? That's it. I could have, my father had 23 confirm children. I could choose to use that as a crutch, or I can choose to make sure that I don't repeat history and do the same thing.
Right.
But life comes down
two
to choices.
Two or three? Or 23?
No, 23.
No, I heard you. I'm just yeah, two or three. Oh, wait, no, 23.
23 confirmed children.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of activity. A
lot of activity. Yeah.
Man, that's you know, that's amazing. Last but not least, you know, this whole idea of like creating your circumstances. Complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is
changing your surroundings and being the person that actually takes control to do so.
Explain that a little bit.
You can only innovate if you actually are willing to go in and make change and not succumb to status quo. And what I mean by that is you don't know what you don't know, so it's up to you to go and change your surroundings. And if I give me a little an extra piece there, I'll go a little deeper. Our education system will change. Everything that I've learned in life has been self-taught, and in many ways you can Google damn near anything.
Yeah.
And I don't need to go to school to understand about Christopher Columbus, who didn't discover shit. The innovation where we are right now is going to be up to us to make that change. That's innovation to me.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Where can people find out more about you, the book? Your email address is in there, but so they have to get it in order to contact you.
The book is easy to find. It's on Amazon, or you can email me at jt@bookinabox.com. You can go to bookinabox.com and read all about our company and what we do. Phenomenal group of people. Great group of individuals, and I can sit here and humbly say I'm very proud to serve each and every one of them.
Well, thank you. Everyone, this has been another installment of Innovation Crush. Thank you to the SAE Institute, and we will talk to you next time.